55, the two co-founded the Daughters of Bilitis, a political and social organization for lesbians. A federal judge has ordered that Texas health clinics may continue to perform abortions in some cases, either those using medication or those involving patients for whom delays would pose an essential ban. The state's attorney general denounced the ruling and said he will appeal. I'm Eileen Alfandari for Pacifica Radio.
Listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and we have a very special program for you today. We're going to start out talking about this wonderful 13th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration for 2020, produced by Andrew Kane in association with We the World. Joining me to talk about that are Mitchell Rabin, Guy McPherson, and Jackson Madnick. Towards the end of the program, we're going to do a very brief coronavirus update, a health update, so stay tuned for that as well. But first, I will introduce and welcome our guests for today's program. Mitchell Rabin is an international speaker, impassioned environmentalist, holistic coach, acupuncturist, workshop leader, stress management consultant, and host of A Better World Radio and TV, which has been on the air since 1993. He is founder, president, and CEO of A Better World Foundation, a nonprofit organization which uses media, education, and communications and social enterprise for creating a more educated and inspired society that is more humane and sustainable. Mitchell is VP on the board of directors of FIONS, on the advisory boards of World Water Rescue Foundation, All Faith Seminary, Partnership for Change, Source of Synergy Foundation, and the board of directors CarePoint, and of an NGO, Institute for Global Education. Mitchell is also on the advisory board of Emerald City, USA, a new model green city near Miami. So hello and welcome, Mitchell, to Heart of Mine.
Well, thank you very much, Catherine. Good to be back here with you.
Excellent, excellent. Also joining us, Guy R. McPherson is an American scientist, professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. He is best known for promoting the idea of near-term extinction, NTE, a term he coined about the possibility of human extinction as soon as 2030. In May 2009, McPherson began transitioning to living on an off-grid homestead in southern New Mexico. McPherson authors a blog called Nature Bats Last that focuses on global climate change, energy decline, and the possibility of imminent human extinction due to the increasing accumulation of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. On November 1, 2015, he was interviewed on National Geographic Explorer with host Bill Nye regarding his NTE views. Andrew Revkin in the New York Times said McPherson was an apocalyptic ecologist. Hello and welcome, Guy, to Heart of Mine.
Thank you, Catherine. It's a pleasure to be on the show with you today.
Great. And also joining us, Jackson Madnick, founder and president of Pearl's Premium Lawn Seed, spent his retirement money to develop a combination of lawn seeds which give more than they take back to the environment. After some 7+ years of intense experimentation and R&D, he and his team of agricultural experts from across the country identified a particular combination of seeds that grow very slowly, very deeply, don't use chemicals for maintaining an awesomely green lawn, and use almost no water. These lawns sequester 8 to 10 times the carbon of an ordinary lawn, so anyone who uses this lawn seed is doing something significant in reducing the carbon footprint. It is an almost, it looks like 50,000 lawns across the country?
500,000.
500,000 lawns across the country. Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Jackson. Welcome to Heart of Mine.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you.
Beautiful. And I have been looking forward to this program and this event. I have been engaged with and participating in these Earth Day celebrations from very close to the beginning, I'm sure. Mitchell, why don't you start us off by telling us about the event that's taking place this year, because it's actually a virtual event online, which people can log into and enjoy and participate.
Yes, sure, Kathy. Well, of course, you and I both have been part of it for a long, long time. And, of course, we usually get together in a church or something of that sort, a wonderful space, and we celebrate together. this time we'll still be celebrating together, but in our own homes, basically, because of the whole COVID-19 event. So, but we're continuing on with it. It'll be our 13th annual World Peace and Earth Day celebration, we call it. It'll be on April 22nd from 6 to 9:30, and it's free, and it's open to the planet, which is appropriate. So on one hand, even though we love mixing with each other and, well, we'd love to kind of kiss with our elbows and all of that stuff, this time we have the opportunity, since it really is a global event anyway, of inviting people from all over the world, which would otherwise be rather impossible. So you could say there's a minus and a plus to this new arrangement. And we're going to have some very wonderful people there, Kathy. Keynote speakers are Guy McPherson, who is with us today, who's been on Better World Radio and TV a few times and is just a very, very special scientist who has brought a tremendous amount of understanding of the real nature of what's going on and the anthropogenic role that we have played in worsening and literally quite destroying our environment. We have another speaker is on with us again today is Jackson Madnick, who, as you read, founded the Pearls Premium Lawn Seed, which is a beautiful gift back to the planet because of all that it does with carbon sequestration and water conservation. We'll have another keynote speaker, Jonathan Granoff, who's the president of Global Securities Institute, who's an attorney, a Sufi, a beautiful guy who I've also interviewed and known for decades, who's done a tremendous amount in bringing greater awareness of the nuclear situation we're all facing that has been backburnered in many ways in people's awareness, but remains an incredibly important part of the larger ecosystem of our beautiful planet. Ellie Lessen is also a longtime environmentalist, and she and I are very close to each other through the Pachamama Institute and the drawdown work of Paul Hawken. And she leads, with a couple of other colleagues of ours, the drawdown movement and education in New York City, which is all about implementing a series of solutions to really draw down on global warming. And they've been put together by a few hundred scientists across the world over the past 6 or 7 years and aggregated together by Paul Hawken, Catherine Wilkinson, and others into this phenomenal work called Drawdown. And it really presents an opportunity to reverse global warming. Now, there are some people who say it can't be done. We've passed the tipping points and all of that. But then there are those of us who believe that this is an incredible opportunity, with all the chips down, to actually make a serious difference and reverse it. Now, just a quick word. You mentioned COVID and the whole coronavirus thing. Well, it ends up just moments before getting on the air, Kathy. My dear friend Diane Williams posted something on Facebook. It says, good news. Earth's ozone layer is healing and global air currents shifting back to normal. So I'm thinking, Three months of our taking our foot off the gas, no pun intended at all, and Mother Earth, with her deep intelligence, already begins to shift the ecosystem back to balance. It's extraordinary, and it shows us how much our own, you know, anthropogenic activities have contributed to the destruction, quite literally, of our planet. And given the smallest opportunity, she begins to reassert and rebalance herself. It's beautiful. Anyway, we have a bunch of other people. We have some Native American speakers. We have Two Feathers. We have Evan Pritchard. We have Catherine Davis, who will be speaking. Well, you'll be on the panel with me at the end, working at getting the internationally renowned cellist Michael Fitzpatrick, who does something called Tuning the Planet, to be joining us as well. And we've got several others that are going to make the whole event really very, very special.
Excellent. And I'm glad you mentioned the changes in the environment. I saw a picture online in India of the Himalayas being able to be seen for the first time in 30 years because the pollution of India has cleared up. So it does show us how resilient our planet is if we give it a chance and stop wounding it. So I think that this Earth Day is very, very important for that reason, but also because we are reviving our own bodies, which are part of the planet. I find myself eating more healthy than I've ever eaten, and I'm pretty good. But I'm more conscientious of nutrients and gingers and all the stuff that we need to have to maintain our immune system. So I think everyone is getting a makeover in an essential way, including the planet. But the idea is to be able to continue, maintain, and sustain whatever we are able to accomplish in this short time, and strategize for changing the political systems around us and taking on our own responsibility, what we can and should do. Yeah. I want to also bring in Guy at this point. Welcome, Guy. I'm really interested with you being an off-grid homesteader because I think many of us are feeling like that in our seclusions at home, that we have become cut off from society, and people are, you know, in various stages of knowing how to really accomplish this with some success. So I'd like to have your thoughts on that, but also the work that you're doing all over with this whole idea of changing the environment, changing our world, and changing our consciousness, I would say.
Well, thank you, Catherine. I no longer live off-grid. I did that for about 10 years in southern New Mexico and also in western Belize in Central America. And upon learning about the very important nature of the aerosol masking effect, which is sometimes called global dimming, I decided to return to my role as a teacher. And so now I live in a place with a far better infrastructure than most of Central America has. Currently, after moving to New York State, I a few months ago moved to a suburb of Orlando, Florida. So I'm no longer living off-grid. I've returned to my educational endeavors, which means having to talk about the important ongoing mass extinction event, the important ongoing worldwide pandemic, and also abrupt irreversible climate change, all of which is having great impact on the lives of many people. And for those of us privileged enough to not experience negative impacts so far, I can pretty much guarantee that those days are not far away.
Absolutely. And what think about this idea of changing what might be a very bleak outcome? I think people are being a little bit forewarned with this pandemic that the mass extinction could very well include us humans, and maybe they will have a greater awareness when other species are being wiped from the planet.
In fact, the lead author of a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Gerardo Ceballos, reporting on the current mass extinction event in 2015, indicated that our species would be among the first to go extinct. So what I try to do is encourage people to in the 60s and the early 90s. And so for me, at least, the certainty of death, including my death, coupled with the absurdity of life, helps me live with urgency and authenticity. And I frequently remind people that the words of Viktor Frankl from his 1946 book, Man's Search for Meaning, describing his years as a Jew during Nazi occupation in Germany. And so he was a prisoner of war. And he wrote in Man's Search for Meaning, between a stimulus and a in that space is the power to choose our growth and our freedom. The last of human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any set of circumstances, end quote. And so I'm providing the stimulus here. I'm presenting the information rooted in the peer-reviewed literature, the stimulus that because we're in the midst of a pandemic, because we're in the midst of a mass extinction event, because we're in the midst of abrupt irreversible climate change, we too are going to die. It's something that most of us came to grips with when we were 12 years old or burned or forgot about it. To a certain extent, got caught up in the current of society, which has almost all of us living in a certain way and not really questioning that way. And so I would argue that, consistent with Frankl, the last of human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any set of circumstances. And I would add to that that we get to choose one's actions as well. And for me, those actions are to live small in my personal life, to live with love in mind, and to pursue excellence in the manner that I conduct my scholarly activities. So that's a lot to ask. It becomes very personal in terms of individual responses. But I think that's the point we're at right now, is we have time, quite abruptly, in fact, spending with ourselves, having lots of time to think about what we're doing on this planet, what we want to be doing on this planet, how do we want to spend our days, recognizing that, consistent with the notion of what Homer wrote some 2,800 years ago in the Iliad, any moment may be our last. So that's where my life has been heading and where it's landed me just beyond 60 years here on planet Earth.
Excellent. Thank you. It's good counsel. And I would love to hear from you, Jackson, as well. And I would say that I have, before really looking at what you're doing, considered science to be almost an adversary to the human condition in the way that nuclear power and, GMOs and all these things that are happening that somehow compromise our life and our environment. It's really encouraging to see someone using science in a way and husbandry and other to actually improve our condition. So I'm really, really glad to see what you're doing. And maybe you can, as you talk about your own work, speak to that responsibility that people who have these skills to put them to good use instead of just for profit that may be harmful.
Thanks. Well, my environmental work came from my mother, Pearl, who was an environmentalist during the 50s and 60s, before that was popular. And she inbred with me a responsibility to take care of the earth and protect our finite water resources. And I used to produce big events all over the world that would be for different causes and issues having to do with energy, the environment, water, and give talks all over about creating events that bring attention to or raise money for worthy causes. And then I sort of semi-retired in the early 90s, producing the grand finale for the United Nations Earth Summit, the first time all the countries of the world came together to address water and the climate. And I helped produce an event that was broadcast worldwide to a 500 million people and in Rio de Janeiro. And then about 8 years later, I sort of semi-retired from doing large-scale events, around causes. And I was renovating a house to be almost off the grid to produce 80% of its heating, cooling, and power, and zero VOCs, and et cetera. And someone in my community talked me into joining the local surface water quality committee that managed the lakes and ponds in my community. And I took a weekend crash course in lake and pond management, and I found out, lo and behold, the number one enemies of lakes, rivers, watersheds, the ocean, is lawn care fertilizer that runs off lawns, down the street, into the storm drains, and doesn't disappear, ends up in the lakes and ponds. to grow the invasive weeds out of control. And then many communities use herbicides to deal with invasive weeds in the surface waters. And then the herbicides and the lawn fertilizer gets into the drinking water that people ingest. And lawn care chemical, either directly from your lawn or getting into your water, it turns out increases the risk of learning and behavioral disorders for children, asthma, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, sexual dysfunction, birth defects, cancer, and leukemia. That's all.
Wow.
And so I wanted to see if there was some way to have a lawn that wouldn't consume all the water. And right now, lawns are consuming 50% of all the clean drinking water in our country. And that the energy produced to filter the water and pump the water uses 20% of all the energy in our country, with half of that energy going to the water for lawns. It's polluting. It's increasing the risk of a dozen diseases. It's using up 10% of all our country's energy. And it's also, in four different ways, it's contributing to global warming and climate change. It turns out that lawnmowers don't have catalytic converters that cars have. So a typical lawnmower is 14 times more polluting than a car per hour, or 43 times more polluting than a hybrid car. So I wanted to see if there was somehow one could have a better grass that didn't take all that water, require all those chemicals, and all the time, money, and water that lawns consume. So I did some research. I found out that there was no such thing as a sustainable grass in the world. And so I did some more research, found out four of the smartest PhDs in turf science on the planet, and I asked them if they would help me, and I spent most of my retirement money on consulting fees, and we grew close to 10,000 trials of certain grasses that were more drought, disease, bug, and salt tolerant. And we lucked out after 5.5 years and about 7,500 tries. We found one batch we call our AHA batch, where it was growing much slower above the soil and putting all its energy into the roots, and the roots were coming out of the bottom of these pots like crazy. And then we grew another 3,000 trials, going up and down tiny amounts and percentages from that one AHA batch until we perfected the interaction. And then in the end, we have a grass that grows very slow. So you mow it only once a month instead of once a week, which means you don't use the lawnmower hardly ever. And if you don't mow it, it flops over because it has less fiber in it. It's not stiff. So, which is nice for bare feet to walk in or sit in, but also because it's not stiff, it can't stand up. After it gets 6 inches tall, it flops over to be a 3-inch-high no-mow meadow that you never, ever mow. And because it grows so slow, and also it puts all its energy into the roots, so it actually grows 4-foot roots, as opposed to most grass only grows 3 or 6-inch roots. From the deep roots, it needs 75% less water. In many places, you water it to get established, and you seldom or never water it again. And because of its very slow growth in accessing more soil, it doesn't never, ever needs chemical fertilizer, ever. You can use a small amount of organic fertilizer or compost instead of chemical fertilizer. And because of the 4-foot roots, and the density above the soil of the amount of surface area per square foot, it sequesters between 8 and 10 times the amount of carbon compared to ordinary shallow root grasses everywhere. And so right now we're sequestering billions of pounds of carbon every year, with a little over 450,000 heading toward 500,000 lawns in the country. But that's just a percentage of 1% of the lawns out there. If we could convert over somewhere between a third and a half of lawns in our country to a Pearl's Premium ultra-low maintenance lawn, we could have the equivalent of carbon sequestration, pulling carbon out of the air and releasing and locking it into the soil, of taking all the cars in the United States off the road. And so this saves people time, because they either mow it once a month or never. It saves them three-quarters of their water bill and no chemicals, so they have a lower risk. And not only does it sequester eight times the carbon, but also it turns out that it produces 24 times the amount of oxygen compared to most grass. There was a Dr. Roberts in the 90s, did some very interesting experiments. He had sealed chambers. He grew different kinds of grass, and he cut it to different heights to measure the oxygen versus carbon produced in 24 hours. He found all grass cut short, 1 inch tall, has a 1-to-1 ratio, produces as much oxygen as carbon in 24 hours. But he found because the grass is on sort of a, you know, it doesn't have enough surface area to be a healthy plant with cut 1 inch tall and to get enough sunlight in. And when you cut it taller at 3 inches, a bluegrass produces 240 times the amount of oxygen compared to carbon in 24 hours. But of all the grasses he tested, he found one kind of grass, a fescue grass, cut 3 inches tall, produces 5,760 times the amount of oxygen and compared to carbon in a 24-hour. Is oxygen producing monster? And so that was part of decisions. The seven different seeds we have, five of them are this type of seeds, fescues, and so it's an oxygen-rich environment. And they found that oxygen-rich environments make you healthier. It lessens asthma. It lessens lung conditions. And it may even help lessen the risk of virus. And and this can widely, you know, people say, what can I do? Well, this is something simple. You can just spread the seeds right over your existing grass and weeds, and it outcompetes everything. It grows deep 4-foot roots, but it doesn't have what's called rhizomes, these sideways runners that makes grass spread. So it only grows where you put the seeds down. You can put it beside a flower bed or a vegetable garden, and it's not going to spread to invade the vegetables or the flowers, so there's no weeding. But and there's been some interesting studies. They find in hospitals, people actually heal and get better much faster if they have a little bit of oxygen or a view of grass. It turns out just looking at the green color and the peacefulness of grass lawns, if you have a view from a hospital room of either a green roof or a lawn, you get well faster. It's also it's more oxygen. So in terms of New York City, you can have our grass on your fire escape. You can put it on your windowsills, in the middle of your table, kitchen table or coffee table, and outside along the street and by the curb, and on your roof. There's a skyscraper down by the World Trade Center area, a 44-story building that has two areas on the roof of our Pearl's Premium ultra-low maintenance grass. and one area for dogs to use, and other area for children to play on. And it's a very around our grass, you feel light and happy, like you do after a thunderstorm, when there's a lot of ozone and it's rich oxygen in the air. But except it's not just during a storm, it's 24 hours a day, and can leak into your house to have a higher oxygen environment, which is very important. So this grass actually saves people time, money, and water, improves their health, lessens climate change, and in case slightly help lessen the risk of virus. So it's kind of a game changer. It's just a matter, and it's sold in New England by all the Whole Foods supermarkets, and we're just working on trying to get it out across the country and have more people know about it. And it saves people so much time, money, and water.
Kathy, we have it over by me here in New York City, in Stuyvesant Town.
Oh, nice, nice.
Bought pounds and pounds and pounds of it. They recognized the guy in charge of the land and the landscaping architect, saw the values that Jackson is sharing here.
Excellent.
Got to have it. Yeah.
I'm going to just take a break for a moment and remind you, everyone, that you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. This is Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and we are speaking about the 13th Annual World Peace Earth Day Celebration. And we're going to get back to this conversation. I want to let all of our guests know, but I just received an emergency phone call, and WBAI is, in a way, the people's radio, from a gentleman who is incarcerated and wanted to reach out to our audience and let them know the situation that they're dealing with. And since I'm unable to, he can't hold on because his time is limited. I'm going to give him an opportunity to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Christopher.
Speak up.
I'm Christopher Hatcher.
Hi.
I'm locked up in AMKC. I was quarantined in EMTC. I just was put back into population, and they're killing us in here. They're promoting nothing but sickness. It's proportionate numbers, man, that everybody is catching it. They're mixing everybody up. I'm one who was already affirmative and in confirmation of the test, and they put me back in population with everybody else. And they have no way of quarantining this sickness, or they don't have nothing. They're not adequate equipped, you know what I'm saying, to prevent anything. All they're doing is spreading the virus and causing more damage and causing more harm than good. We need help in here because people are just, like, sitting around, like, sitting ducks waiting for death. And we don't know what to do, man, you know what I'm saying, because our cry is not being heard.
And what is the name of the facility you're in?
AMKC, C95, 1818 Hazen Street.
And where is that in New York?
Rikers Island.
Rikers Island.
State.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
All right, so we'll try to get this word out to the activists and see if they are able to help out with that situation and do something about it, contacting our governor. So I want to thank you for your call.
Yes, please, man. Thank you, man.
Okay, bye-bye now. Okay, well, I just felt like it was important to give him a chance to reach out to our audience.
Yes.
For assistance.
Highlights the sort of the desperateness of the situation anyway, Kathy.
Which, yeah,
really the one of the themes we're talking about today, whether it has to do with COVID-19 or the desperate global warming, you know, end of ice situation we're dealing with planetarily.
Yeah, it's there's a lot going on. And one of the beautiful things about this event, I mean, it has been going on for many years. This is the 13th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration. But it's an opportunity to come together and hear from, connect with people who are actively doing something to create change, who are actively working with each other to uplift each other as well as to work towards uplifting the world. And even though this may be a different kind of event because it is online, but we're all online these days making those connections. So it might be a wonderful opportunity for people who want to get engaged and begin to make connections to do that. And it's going to be a live event Wednesday, April 22nd from 6 to 9:30 p.m. globally online. It's free, and you can go to planetheart.org, and you can go to earthday@wetheworld.org for more information and to connect to viewing of this event. And Mitchell, maybe you can begin to tie this together, and I want to give everyone an opportunity to give your contact information if people want to connect with what you're doing in particular and find out more.
Sure, Kathy, sure. First of all, I'm glad you made the announcement of the website, because that's the way you can go and register at www.planetheart.org. And we'll have information at betterworld.tv as well. But it is open to everyone. It is free. It is global. And we do really invite everyone to participate. It's very much a heartfelt experience. On one hand, we are very cognizant of the seriousness of the situation. And, you know, per what Guy McPherson was sharing with us, and that's why I invited him to be keynote speaker, because I so appreciate the depth of his understanding of the global crisis, and he's unvarnished, as you could tell, very kind but diplomatic, but unvarnished, and he says a lot of the truths that scientists across the world know but are just not willing to say, because it's very, you know, it forces us to deal with our mortality today instead of tomorrow, if you will. And I think that's actually a beautiful gift that Dr. McPherson brings to the table, quite honestly, in the traditional understanding of living, the shamanic idea of living with death on your shoulder, if you will. And that can, in a very real way, inspire a greater life. And on the other hand, we have Jackson Madnick and the beautiful work he's doing, which I feel is working diligently at making the difference that we can make that is still very much within our hands. And what just happened that we talked about before, Kathy, of Mother Earth beginning to reverse after just a few months of us taking our foot off the brake, just as a kind of a funny way of putting it, stopping our incessant polluting in all of the cities across the world during this COVID-19 episode shows us that you use the word very well of resilience. There is this incredible resilience of the earth in all of her elements to shift back to, or I should say, to balance out the elements so we can breathe again.
Okay, so
it's so important for us to digest that.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to make sure that we all had a chance to speak before I run short on time. And Guy, you haven't had too much opportunity to speak, so I want you to come back in and give us a little bit of counsel going forward, or share what you'd like to share, and let people know how they can connect with you.
Well, thank you very much for welcoming the call from the gentleman from Rikers Island, where more than 700 people have tested positive for COVID-19 already, including about 400 correctional officers. And that makes an important statement. These are among the people who are treated most poorly by our entire society. Houseless people and incarcerated people are the ones we try to look away from to the maximum possible extent, and who get tossed to the curb as a result by the entire society. These are the people who are suffering the greatest. If you want to take action, make sure it's local and focus on the people who are not receiving positive attention. And this includes houseless people, what most people call homeless people. This includes incarcerated people or recently incarcerated people. There's a lot of people out there who are not nearly as privileged as you and I and Jackson and Mitchell. And we can do something important locally to improve the lives of one or two people. I would argue that if we are able to improve the lives of one or two people in our entire life, then we have led a useful life. And I quote Ralph Waldo Emerson frequently in pointing out that the goal of life is not happiness, it's not to be happy, but it's to be useful. How can we be useful? For me, it's spreading information, it's sharing evidence, it's trying to help people who are suffering and to help non-human organisms as well that don't have a voice in the society. So I would encourage people to focus on something, somebody beyond yourself at this most interesting of times in human history. And if you can think about your legacy, whether you imagine that you have one or not, think about what that legacy might be. Think about how you might be remembered with respect to how you treat people and the planet. And that's been my message for more than two decades now. Thank you for the opportunity to remind people about it.
Yes, and how can people connect with you, your writing, or the maybe an opportunity to study, to work with what you're doing?
All of my information is shared at guymcpherson.com. That's GUYMCPHERSON.com. And thank you again. I very much appreciate it, Catherine.
Thank you. I really appreciate what you've offered to the program as well. And Jackson, do you have a website that people can go to learn more?
Yes. I wanted just to mention one thing positive. I heard yesterday that in cities in China, people, for the first time in their entire lives, have seen blue skies, that they weren't even aware what a blue sky looked like. It was just always gray and haze and pollution, and they've seen blue skies. So there's a chance there that the people and the government may actually join in a major movement toward protecting the Earth. The next biggest thing after this virus is our climate and the Earth and lessening carbon. So and that's what we're all about, is something that's very simple that people can easily do, and just plant a little seed right over the existing grass or in the middle of their kitchen table or along their windowsills or their roof.
Okay.
You can reach us at pearlspremium.com, P-E-A-R-L-S, as in Sam, P-R-E-M-I-U-M.com.
Excellent, excellent.
508-653-0800.
I interrupted you there. Say that number again.
508-653-0800.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Mitchell, I have to go to the next segment, so please let people know how to contact you.
Absolutely, Kathy. You can reach me at 212-420-0800 or www.mitchellrabin.com. Two L's, MitchellRabin.com, or the media site www.abetterworld.tv.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you
so
much.
So appreciate.
And again, it's the 13th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration, Wednesday, April 22nd, 6 to 9:30 p.m. It is free. It is online. Go to planetheart.org and earthday@wetheworld.org. And we will speak again soon. Thank you, everyone.
Sounds great. Thanks again, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Now we're being joined by John Monroe, the holistic eye care educator, who wanted to give us some information on health with regard to health and the COVID-19 virus. Welcome, John.
Yeah, hi, Kathy. How are you doing today?
I'm good, but we're very, very short on time.
All right.
So I want you to be able to share what you can before we go to the news coming up.
All right. I have a few little tips for people to help with the virus. You know, people like to take zinc, and that helps kill viruses. But the problem with zinc, it can't penetrate the membrane on the cell. So you need to eat quercetin and zinc citrate together. And quercetin, you can take 500 milligrams a day, and that's spelled Q-U-E-R-T-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin, 500 milligrams. And the zinc citrate is easier for your body to absorb. The zinc citrate, you want to take 25 milligrams of zinc citrate. And the quercetin helps transport the zinc through the cell membrane into the cell, and it can kill the virus microbes. And you can also eat foods with quercetin, like onions, grapes, apples, berries, green tea, ginkgo biloba. And zinc is found in pumpkin seeds, pine nuts, oysters, sirloin beef. There's a lot of things that contain zinc. And another good thing you can do for the virus, there's a tea that you can make. And you use sage, cinnamon, and bay leaf. And you use a teaspoon of each. We'll make one cup of tea. So you can, you know, triple the dosage or whatever. But the tea is real good. And you drink like 3 cups a day. So you use like 3 teaspoons of the sage, cinnamon, and bay leaf. And you steep it for 20 minutes. And you drink that, and it's real good for all types of viruses. A nurse was talking about that, how she worked during a lot of these virus outbreaks, and she never got sick because she would drink this tea. And there's also colloidal silver water, C-O-L-L-O-I-D-A-L, colloidal silver water. We like the 10 parts per million. There's vitamin D3. You always want a plant-based vitamin D3. The dry form, it's a tablet, 5,000 IU a day. Vitamin C, you also want a plant-based vitamin C from rose hips, oranges, cherries, grapefruit. And I suggest taking 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day. And there's even coconut oil can help with viruses. It's antiviral. And MSM is another product. And there's just all kind of good things you can do, you know, drinking green tea. And you should not be drinking a lot of alcohol right now, smoking cigarettes, drinking a lot of coffee, sugar. You know, it's not good for your immune system.
Okay, we're going to have to run. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to WBAI in New York, and we're going to the Pacifica News.
You with me now. Somehow, I don't know how I've known since birth. I'm without you, water. Please send a message to me. Let me know you're on your way. We'll set our spirits free.
In New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. The United States is set to reach its highest daily number of deaths on or around Sunday, according to models by the prominent Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington in Seattle. It estimated that 60,415 people in the U.S. would die of coronavirus by August, assuming social distancing policies continue through May. That projection is down from the 82,000 it predicted earlier this week. The number of known cases in the District, Maryland, and Virginia stood at 11,766 as of this morning, with 6,186 cases in Maryland, over 4,000 in Virginia, and a little bit over 1,500 in the District. The number of virus-related deaths was 138 in Maryland, 109 in Virginia, and 33 in the District, for a total of 280 fatalities. Yesterday, Maryland, for the first time, released racial demographics of its COVID-19 cases and fatalities. Maryland is about 30% black, but black people make up half the deaths and cases where race is known. That includes 55 of the 103 fatalities where officials have demographic information. Montgomery County announced yesterday that all shoppers must wear face coverings in grocery stores, pharmacies, and other retail establishments starting Monday. Under the order from County Health Officer Travis Gales, businesses must also limit the number of customers in the store and enforce social distancing among patrons while they wait. Those who fail to do so could face a $500 fine, the county said in a statement. The new requirements in Montgomery County came just one day after D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser issued a similar order on social distancing and masks for patrons shopping for food. New York State now counts a total of nearly 160,000 cases and over 7,000 deaths. The New York Fire Department data shows that 1,125 patients were pronounced dead in their homes or on the street in the first 5 days of April, more than eight times the 131 deaths recorded during the same period last year. Paramedics are not testing those they pronounced dead for the virus, so it is almost impossible to say how many of those people were infected. Some may have been tested before they died and were either not admitted to hospitals or were discharged. But the huge jump in numbers suggests that the virus was involved in many of those recent deaths. And in the past 2 weeks, the number of virus patients hospitalized in New York has grown more and more slowly, from over 20% a day at one point to single-digit percentage increases this week. For example, from Wednesday to Thursday, the number of hospitalizations increased by just 200 to over 18,000 total, or about 1%. If the trend were to continue, the number of people in hospitals would soon start to decline, a sign that the virus has passed its apex. But the number of people dying of the virus continues to grow. The state recorded 799 deaths from Wednesday to Thursday, another one-day high. and efforts to pass more funding for the Trump administration's small business relief loans program have stalled in the Senate. The legislation would provide an additional $250 billion for the program, but Senate Democrats are also